The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
It is time for Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, their website, and of course you can call them anytime, 208-0301, the old-fashioned way, area code 205. Dr. Rab, how you doing on this fine day?
Yeah, we're good, but you know, I'm listening to that introduction and I'm like, man, I'm so analog. It's like... our Facebook page is like, it's just, we don't really do a whole lot of social media, but I think that's just who I am. Like the other day, like I read books for, you know, for pleasure. Yeah. And I don't read it on a Kindle or an iPad, and people look at me like I've got two heads, man. I got a book with me and I'm reading it in my kid's baseball practice, and they're like, what is your problem? So for everyone out there listening, just come to the office.
There you go. Just come to the office. And you know what? But you say an analog guy. You are on the cutting edge by being on Tony Curry Radio. I mean, you're doing internet radio, man. You're all over the place. So you are crossing a new line here. So, and we get great emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. We read them every single week. And of course, you hear the show at least 5 days a week on TKR. And it is brought to you by Ed's Pet World. I want to share something with you real quick. So we have a couple of gerbils I got from Ed's about a year ago. And I've been setting this up now for about 3 weeks. I keep telling my daughter, Lila, that I think one of them is pregnant. Well, they're both female, so it's impossible, but she doesn't know that. So I keep telling her Milo, the little black one, is getting really, really big. And I said, I read that like right before they give birth, they get huge. So I went to Ed's Pet World last week and I bought a couple of guinea pigs that were the same exact color as her gerbils.
Oh, and my gosh.
And I set my phone up in the corner so she couldn't see it. And she went running to the house on Sunday when she came over and she wanted to see her gerbils. And she saw those guinea pigs and they're the exact same color. She's like, what in the hell happened to their tails? What's going on? And she was sitting there. She was crossed between crying and excited and this, that, and the other. And I said, I don't know what happened. So she picked one up. She started feeling the belly the whole nine yards and she didn't know what going on. Then I said, I pranked her. It was hilarious. So now we have two guinea pigs in the Curry household as well. So we don't talk a lot about little pocket pets and things like that. We do talk a lot about dogs and cats. We have a lot of cat news to get into today. And again, info@tonycurryradio.net. I did see an interesting story here. A Gallup poll came out last week that says that roughly 27% of Americans have drastically cut out meat in their diets for two reasons. First of all, they think it's healthier, and I guess it is. And second of all, it's going to cut down on the greenhouse effect, the greenhouse gases, because there are so many foods that dogs and cats eat that come from animals. And I didn't realize, do you know how many pounds of meat the average cat eats annually?
Oh my gosh.
Just one cat.
Pounds of meat. The average cat, all right, I'm going to say it eats 4,000.
4,000 pounds?
I'm just guessing.
No, it's 86 pounds, which comes out to roughly 8 6-pound salmon and 13 chickens. So when you look at it
every
that
time
way,
you ask me these questions, it's always way higher than I think.
86.
I'm pulling out the stops here.
So when you think about meat and byproducts that goes in, and you're thinking of one cat, and you think about the billions of cats we have in this country, it's pretty amazing. So there's a new trend going on right now where veterinarians are now trying to push for a vegan diet for our dogs and cats. There's a Dr. Ariel Griffith out in the San Francisco area, and she started a new non-for-profit where she's trying to get all of her customers to feed their animals only vegan diets. My question to you is it healthy? Is it possible? What needs to be in a vegan thing? And do our animals like it?
So where, tell me again where this person
She's
resides?
She's in San Francisco, Dr. Ariel Griffith.
There you go.
Yeah, those crazy San Franciscans.
Everybody in California thinks that everything should be vegan.
Yeah, exactly, right?
You know, so, I mean, you know, if there's nothing wrong with eating there's nothing wrong with not eating meat,
yeah,
but you got to have protein.
Yeah.
So, you can, As long as you have a good protein source, it doesn't matter, you know. But you also have to have you have to have carbs, you have to have vitamins, you have to have minerals, you have to have all the things that you need for for the pet's body to have everything that needs to be healthy. So, but there's a lot of dog foods that are soy. The protein is soy in it, and we recommend those diets all the time, especially to dogs that have food allergies, whether it's food allergy that causes skin issues or a food allergy that causes GI issues. So there's nothing wrong with that, and it can be a balanced, healthy diet. So and that goes for dogs and cats.
Okay, so for like these refrigerated meals, like Farmer's Dog and all these high-end priced dog meals, I mean, they come out of the refrigerator. They look like steak. They look like chicken. Are these should can these be put in place of a regular diet? First of all, are they formulated that way? And second of all, is that something maybe you should give as perhaps a treat, maybe once or twice a week, and then get back to the dry stuff? What's your thoughts on that?
The more you vary your pet's diet, the more likely it is going to get sick.
Okay.
And I don't mean, usually it's not a life-threatening illness, but it can be an acute GI upset that makes you lose sleep and lose time at your job and lose money because you have to clean up your pet's vomit or
Yes.
their diarrhea. And then the next day you have to come into the vet and pay money. So stick with one diet and limit the number of treats that you give your pet. And if you are curious about what food that you should feed, you need to be sure that it has the AAFCO seal on it. And that just means that all of the ingredients that they claim on the label are in there. And that the company that manufactures that food is not trying to pull the wool over your eyes.
Okay, and finally then, I know I love eating vegetables, but vegetables don't love me. When I eat cauliflower, broccoli, or onions, I toot like a goose. How do raw vegetables affect our animals? My Rainer, my Australian Shepherd will eat anything. He'll eat pickles. I mean, he'll eat anything. But are giving raw vegetables to our animals good or no?
It's fine, but
Okay.
you got to stay away from onions. You know, you mentioned onions, and onions are bad. Don't
Yep.
so onions and garlic, don't give those to your pets. But carrots and broccoli and cauliflower and that all that stuff's fine.
Okay.
As long as it doesn't upset their stomachs, because one dog or one cat might eat that stuff and be totally fine,
Yeah.
but then another one might eat it, and just for whatever reason, it causes them GI upset. It's not toxic; it just doesn't agree with them, just like
There you
you
go.
know. So there you go.
All right, Dark Side of the Pooch, Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, brought to you by Ed's Pet World. I mentioned the guinea pigs and the gerbils, and they've got all kinds of snakes. They've got cockatoos, they got ferrets, sugar gliders, you name it down there. They've been in business for nearly 50 years down there in beautiful Homewood. They've redone the streets, so there's plenty of parking down there. Go see Ange, go see Seth, the entire group. And Seth is opening up his own brick and mortar toy store. Of course, you can also check out a bunch of toys in there. He does everything from Battlestar Galactica to Legos to Star Wars stuff, still in the box, watches, you name it, collectibles. If you got some stuff he buys, sells, and trades, check out Ed's Pet World. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Doug in New Orleans said his Basset Hound came in. By the way, said he loves the show. Said his Basset Hound came in last Tuesday and was bleeding from the gums and won't stop bleeding. He's wondering if his Basset Hound was bitten by a snake. It is that time of year where the snakes start coming out, starts to warm up. They start to sunbathe a little bit. Do you, and again, I guess you could look for the fang marks. If he's bleeding from the gums, that's perhaps, but if in fact his dog has been bitten by snakes, and we've talked about this, because I've got that amazing story about my Basset Hound, where I actually had an overnight emergency pet shelter place ask me if I want to spend $1,700 to give it mouth to mouth if my dog went into cardiac arrest. I said, no, I'm good. I'm good. I think he'll be okay. But what do you do if your dog is bitten by a snake?
You need, in a perfect world, this isn't going to happen, but
Yeah.
so you know we're going to shoot for the stars here. In a perfect world, you would confirm that it was bitten by a snake, and you know maybe even get a picture of the snake, or maybe even kill the snake and take it in to the vet with you, because then they could identify the type of snake that it was, because there are two types of anti-venom, and some people call it anti-venin. It's the same thing, just pronounced differently. There are two different types for two different categories of snakes. And so if the veterinarian knows which family it fell in, you know, if they have that anti-venom, then they can administer that. It is not something that we give unless we can confirm it was a snake bite and what type of snake bite it was, because let's say if it wasn't that,
Okay.
then the anti-venom could create an allergic reaction just the same as a snake bite could. So
Wow.
you don't want to give that unless you're sure that you know what you're dealing with. Now, I have never administered a dose of that, and I have never had a pet die of a snake bite.
Okay.
Snake bites usually, at their worst, they're going to cause some local bruising and swelling, and maybe some the skin may slough off if it's bad enough. But in the one really bad case I had, we did some serial bandage changes, put them on antibiotics for a while, and the dog did fine. Now, if it's a really, really bad envenomization, then they can have trouble clotting their blood, and then that can be fatal. But I've never seen a case of that. So it really just depends on how sure you can be that the pet was bitten by a snake, what kind of snake it was. And then from that point on, it really is just kind of about managing infection, because snake mouths are dirty and they have bacteria in it. And so almost across the board, they're going to be given antibiotics. There's going to be some blood tests that we run, probably going to check their clotting times to be sure they are still able to clot their blood. And then the other medications, there's some anecdotal evidence, such as anti-inflammatories, that help. Other people say don't give them because they can make it worse. But it's pretty tried and true that you're going to treat the pain and you're going to treat for an infection, and then you're just going to monitor symptoms.
So we shouldn't try to suck the venom out.
Yeah, you should whip out your pocket knife
That dog will
and
bite
cut
you.
them open
Exactly.
and just go to town.
Now, I will say
Don't do
this.
that.
All four of my dogs have been bitten by a copperhead when I was at the old house. And it is the most, and I put one in the veterinarian thing. He was fine. The other three, I talked to you and you were like, just keep an eye on them. They'll be fine. 2 days later, they were running out in the backyard again. But it's the most bizarre thing because they were, and all four of them did the same thing. They went to the kitchen and they just stood there and they didn't move. I mean, they were as still as anything I've ever seen. They just stand there. They don't move. And you will know something weird is going on with them. I don't know why that is. Do you know? They just don't
I
move.
think they're,
They just freak out.
yeah, I think they're probably just afraid, because I mean, sometimes it's a surprise for a dog, but a lot of times they see something, because there's the two main places they get bit, is on the muzzle, around the mouth, just like our friend from New Orleans said, because they are inquisitive and they're sniffing at it or trying to bite it or whatever. And so those dogs know that it's there. So maybe they're not quite as surprised when they get bit. But if a dog gets bit on one of his extremities, because that's, the other place that dogs and cats are going to get bitten, they're really freaked out. Because they have no clue what just happened. So I think those dogs and cats are just they're and you know not in shock, like cardiovascular shock, but they're just shocked that that happened. And so they kind of just freeze.
All right, there you go. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, of course, on Facebook, their website, which is just a fantastic website. Dr. Rab said so. And of course, you can give them the call, 208-0301, area code 205. They're fantastic. And by the way, if you're wanting to board, we're right around the corner from summer vacation. School's out in a couple weeks. Call them early because they get booked up all summer long. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Toby in Greenville, interesting question. Did you watch the Kentucky Derby on Saturday?
Man, I'm not a derby guy, mainly because it is 3 hours of pomp and circumstance and
Yes.
then 2 minutes of an actual race. And I'm just like, man, I ain't got time for this.
You know what, though? I mean, from a guy that loves fish, you would love the infield at the Kentucky Derby. It is
Oh, I'm
it is
sure.
Daytona 500 or Talladega times 10. It's amazing. And there's a lot of lookers there, too. The women love wearing the hats. Leading up to the Kentucky Derby, seven horses had to be euthanized in 7 days, which was really unfortunate. And of course, reigniting a lot of scrutiny about the safety of horse racing. He wanted to know, what's Dr. Rab's thoughts on racing horses?
I am not. I know the headline. I saw that, and I think it may have been last night. I caught like a 2 or 3 minute, blurb on it, and I know that a lot of the people that are super reputable, in Kentucky that do equine work, you know, they're investigating it too, and they're trying to figure it out because the people up there that take care of those horses, they love those horses.
Sure.
For two reasons. Number one, they devoted their life to diagnosing and fixing whatever ailment they could have.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I mean, it's that's how they provide for their families.
Yeah, it's
you know?
An investment, yeah.
But you know, the problem in that industry is that there's a lot of cheating that goes on.
Yeah.
Not from the veterinarians. You know, at least I would hope not. But you know, there are people that will, you know, break the rules, and they do it for personal gain, and they don't think about the health of the animals. And I mean, that's a fact. And I don't know if that's what happened at the Derby this past year, but the, you know, horse racing has been under the microscope and scrutinized for years because these horses are being shot full of stuff to increase performance, and they die from it. So, I mean, horse racing is cool. I mean, I don't ever want to see it go away. And I hope that the stuff that happened at Churchill is on the up and up, and, you know, maybe it's just a freak deal. But yeah, I hope that they can get some, you know, regulations in that sport that protect the animals.
It's unfortunate because there was one horse that was coming around. I guess it was running sprints, practicing, and it got spooked by a bright light in a disc jockey stand, and it just kind of welled up, and it just ran into the stand and broke a leg, and so they had to euthanize it. And explain to me, and I know you don't deal with horses particularly, you have dealt with giraffes, but I think as a fan or as a horse lover, you think to yourself, okay, a horse has broken his leg. Why can't we just wrap that thing up and at least put it out, you know, or sell it to someone who could take care of that horse? Do you know the reasoning behind that besides the cost associated with it?
Oh yeah. So when you're dealing with these horses right here, money is no object.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not about the money. When I came out of school, I had every intention of just working on horses. So I did a year-long internship in Arizona. This was a long time ago. This was 2009. So I did an internship, and all we did was horses, and it was a referral practice in Arizona. And I mean, it was the place in Arizona. So I spent the very, very early part of my career, that's all I did. But the thing about horses is when they break a leg, you have to think that the anatomy of a horse, if you, you know, hold up your hand and you look at those things on your hand called fingers,
yeah.
Okay. Horses have four fingers, and they just so happen to also be their legs. So that's it. You can equate every leg of a horse to basically what your finger is.
Okay.
The anatomy is very similar once you get past the foreleg. Okay. Now, once you get to the elbow, and once you get to the knee, and once you get to the hip and the shoulder, it's a little bit different. But the lower extremity of a horse, they're bearing all their weight on four of those that are basically the anatomical same as your fingers, pretty much. So when those things break, you can't fix it so that it can bear a quarter of its weight again. It's just not possible.
Oh wow!
And you can't amputate a limb and expect a horse to be able to move. It just they're too heavy to bear three quarters of their weight.
Yeah.
On legs. So you can't amputate it. You can't just leave it there. They're not going to survive. So when a horse breaks a leg, it's over.
Yeah. And you're talking about a 2,000 pound animal. I mean, it's not like, you know, like a dog, you can put wheels on it or something.
They're not quite that heavy, but you know, they're, you know, 1200, 1400 pounds. So, I mean, you know, they can't support their weight on a broken leg. It will never heal.
Yeah.
So that's why they're euthanized.
info@tonycurryradio.net. Your email questions every single week. We do the best we can. Some people write pretty quick ones, including Renee and Hoover, but we don't really know the entire situation, but we do the best at tackling it. By the way, you can hear the show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. Download that TKR app. Over 100,000 people have done that. And listen to the shows wherever you get your podcasts. We're on every major industry. Renee says, yes, I'm one of those ladies. She loves collecting rescues. She's got four dogs already, and I'm paraphrasing here. She has a 1 and a 3-year-old child, for first of all, and she has just rescued a large brown poodle named Cooper. And she said that Cooper is growling at her 1 and 3-year-olds a lot around the house. And she's asking first, if I get her fixed, will that help her temperament? And second of all, should I worry about this dog perhaps taking a snip at one of her children? Because if in fact she does, she's putting the dog down. How have you, first of all, she's got four other dogs. And whenever you put dogs with other dogs, they react. They're just like boys. My 18-year-old son is an angel until he gets around four other 18-year-olds and then he acts like an idiot. Dogs are the same way. What's your thoughts on what this woman should do?
I would be very cautious and just, you know, speaking personally, I'm not going to have a dog in my house if I have any inkling that it's going to bite one of my kids.
No, I'm with you.
Now, I'm not, if it's a rescue, I think she said, did she say it was a rescue?
Yes, it is. Huh?
Okay. So, but I'm not, I would also not euthanize it. If I would find another home for it. And okay, whether that was going through a rescue group. And if you, there's a lot of breed specific rescue groups all over, you know, every state is going to have a bunch of breed specific rescue groups. And you could probably find, you know, a standard poodle, if it's a standard poodle or miniature poodle or whatever it is, a rescue group of Alabama or of Georgia or something, and just transition that pet to that group or, you know, Humane Society. And I know that people, you know, worry about sending a pet there, but we have great Humane Societies here that really do a great job of adopting animals out. And there are some animals that do not do well with children. And the kids might be totally fine and not, you know, getting in the dog's face and not harassing the dog at all. I'm not saying that's what's going on. Some dogs are freaked out by little people.
And if that's
the case, just find another home for it.
I have been in this situation before. There's just too much going on. I mean, dogs react differently when there's four dogs. You don't know what it went through as a rescue dog. It obviously doesn't sound like it's very submissive. And then you throw in a couple of kids. And sometimes she's like, well, you know, I keep it in a separate room than the other dogs. And she takes it for walks 3 or 4 days a week. I don't know if that helps. I don't know if it's not something you can work out, right? You can't, sometimes you just can't rehabilitate a dog in that situation.
You can't. And it's just too much of a liability. I can understand if it was just an adult and the dog was growling at the adult, and the adult, you know, they can take it into their own hands if they want to, and they're accepting the risk, you know, and they understand the risk. But kids, I mean, even if they're, you know, middle school age, you know, you can't rely on them to protect themselves from a dog. It's just not, you know, in my opinion, it's just too much of a liability.
Yeah. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Tippy in Henderson, Nevada wants to know, is there any way to stop his cat from catching birds?
Don't let it outside.
He said his cat is catching roadrunners. Have you ever seen a real roadrunner before? They're super cool birds. Yeah, that's a fast ass cat right there. They can catch a roadrunner. But is there any way to keep a cat from catching birds?
No. I mean, seriously, don't let it outside or be outside with it all the time and put an electrical collar on it. And anytime it starts going towards a bird, you give it a buzz, you know.
All right.
I mean, that's it. That's, you can't do anything to the bird. You know, I mean, you can't like send a decoy bird out. Maybe he should dress up like a roadrunner.
No.
And then every time the cat like comes to at him, he can like pounce on the cat and teach the cat not to mess with
him. Dress him up like Wild E. Coyote. He's never going to catch that roadrunner.
Yeah, don't do that because he couldn't catch. Well, maybe do that.
Yeah.
Maybe if he dresses it up like Wild E. Coyote, he will no longer be able to catch the roadrunner.
Billy and Ross Bridge finally, what's the real reason dogs sniff other dogs' butts? And what do they learn from sniffing it? Is it like a wolf? Is it like a wolf kind of thing? I know what wolves sniff, and they can tell like it's like 23andMe or something. They can tell the entire ancestry of another wolf by sniffing its behind. Are dogs that smart?
I think they're getting to know the other dog. I think it is purely, and I don't know what all they get from it, but I'm confident that it's just a way to get to know the dog.
It's a handshake.
Yeah. Yes.
And a weird. in a weird kind of way. All right, Dark Side of the Pooch brought to you by Ed's Pet World. Go down there and check them out. They do all kinds of exotic pets. You name it, they've got it down there. And if they don't have it, they'll probably find it for you. Plus, they have great fish, by the way. I get all my fish down there. My 55-gallon is full of beautiful fish from Ed's Pet World. They also do wonderful toys in Seth's Toy Closet. They've got a ton of toys. They're moving some of those toys out to his brand-new location in Homewood. We'll have some more details on that. Give them a call at 879-1331, Ed's Pet World. They've been in business for nearly 50 years. Anything exciting happening there at Rossbridge Animal Hospital you want to share with us before we let you go?
Oh man, we had to we had a nucleate a dog's eye today.
What?
Yeah, we had to take an eye out. It was too traumatized, and it has most likely a tumor associated with one of its nerves. And when that happens, the eye does not function properly. They may not blink properly. It doesn't heal well. So yeah, we had to do an enucleation today, and that's not something we do every day. That's so that was kind of cool.
How can you tell if the dog can't see through that eye, or can you just know based on what your expertise?
Well, I think the vision was present, but I don't think that the dog could blink effectively, and I don't think it was producing adequate tears.
Yeah.
So it had a really, really bad scratch on its cornea, full thickness corneal ulceration. And so when you have that, they could potentially be repaired, but it's very it's a big investment both financially and from a time standpoint to repair those. And in my opinion, because of what we suspected the underlying condition was, it just made more sense to take the eye out than to try to fix the eye and then potentially in 6 months be right back where we were today.
Okay, you know the follow-up question. Is that wearing an eye patch? What do you put on a dog with no eye, with no eyeball? I'm imagining that's not particularly aesthetically pleasing to look at.
Man, you'd be surprised because the hair is, this is a long-haired dog. It's a beautiful Shih Tzu.
You do a come
He's
over?
So handsome. Yeah, the hair will grow over it, and you'll be surprised that there will be a lot of people that will look at this dog in 4 or 5 months and have no clue.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. Tell people how they can find you, brother.
Well, you can look at our social media, which we talked about at the beginning of the show. It's not super great because I'm an analog man. But you can call us 205-208-0301. You can email us. RossbridgeAnimalHospital@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, but you may not find a lot.
All right, man. Thank you, brother. We'll catch up next week.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.